on Straight Talk Africa. It's the tobacco industry on the African continent. Smoking continues to decline in the Western world, but its use continues to increase in emerging markets in the developing world, especially Africa. Why is that so? We'll find out next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, May 28th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello, Shaka.
And hello, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll examine the tobacco industry on the African continent as it comes under scrutiny for child labor issues, more aggressive tobacco taxes, and general health concerns.
Well, such a timely issue that is of concern to all of us. And coming up later in our social media inbox, we'll reveal the thoughts we've received from our audience. Also, you at home can participate by sending us emails or commenting on our Facebook page or simply by calling us. We look forward to sharing your opinions ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, on May 31st, the world marks No Tobacco Day. Whereas in Europe and in the United States, people smoke less than they did 10 years ago, on the continent, the trend is reversed. Researchers say that a growing number of young Africans are smoking with deadly consequences. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
I don't smoke tobacco products and never have, and here's why.
Every 6 seconds, someone somewhere in the world dies because of tobacco use. And an estimated 600,000 individuals, non-smokers, die annually from exposure to secondhand smoke. The majority of those deaths are among women and children. If trends continue, tobacco will kill more than 8 million people each year by 2030. While smoking is declining in much of the industrialized world, its use, especially by young people, often targeted by industry ad campaigns, is growing in most of Africa.
It has never harmed me anyway, so just continue smoking. It's kind of a disease. Stop smoking, don't feel okay. You feel like you're down, you need that tobacco to keep running.
There's a lot of things inside the smoke, like there's rat poison and doom and things like that inside, and you must not use it.
So I won't try smoking. So it's not healthy, it kills your lungs, it destroys every blood cell in your life, so it will ruin your life.
More numbers. China grows 3 times more tobacco than Brazil, number 2 on the production list, followed closely by India and the United States. Malawi and Zimbabwe are among the top 10 global tobacco-producing nations. In Malawi and several other sub-Saharan countries, tobacco growing is increasing. Ghana has doubled its tobacco production in the last 10 years. Production has more than doubled in Mali, and in Zambia and Mozambique, tobacco growing increased nearly 700% in the last decade. The International Tobacco Growers Association says tobacco is an important contributor to Africa's improving economies, impacting millions of workers and the livelihoods of a large section of the population, and that the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, FCTC, and campaigns like the World Health Organization's No Smoke Day amount to a new form of imperialism by health officials. The FCTC is a binding international treaty negotiated by the UN's World Health Organization, signed by 174 countries, including 42 African countries. Its goal is simply to reduce the supply and demand of tobacco products and to save lives. Health organizations support tobacco controls, assisting farmers with alternatives to growing tobacco, education campaigns, raising taxes on tobacco sales, and regulating and restricting advertisers, all strategies that dramatically reduce smoking in about a generation in Europe and the United States.
Every 6 seconds, another person dies from tobacco use.
This year's No Tobacco Day theme is raise taxes on tobacco.
But there's something we can do about it.
I said
tobacco taxes go up, death and disease go down. Any questions?
Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now, joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Joshua Charo, Africa Program Director for the Campaign for Tobacco Free Kids, a nonprofit organization based here in the nation's capital. The group champions the fight to reduce tobacco use in the United States and around the world. Well, I have to say, Joshua, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Ivan Blecher, director and senior economist in the International Tobacco Control Research Program at the American Cancer Society and an affiliate in the Southern Africa Labor and Development Research Unit at the University of Cape Town. He joins us via Skype from South Africa. Well, it's a pleasure to have you again. To have you on the show, Ivan.
Good evening, Shaka. Great to be here.
Thank you so much. Francois Van de Marwe, chairman of the International Tobacco Growers Association for the Africa region. He also joins us via Skype from Cape Town, South Africa. He also serves as the chairperson and CEO of the Tobacco Institute of Southern Africa. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program, Francois.
Thank you, Shaka. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity.
You're most welcome. Last but not least, Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa, Pan-African industrialist and philanthropist. He is the founder of the Pan-African Tobacco Group, which operates in 9 countries. He joins us via telephone link up from Hamburg, Germany. Good evening, Tribert.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
I'm very well, and you?
Thank you so much for joining us, this time all the way from Germany.
Yes, thank you for calling me and giving me this opportunity.
You're most welcome, sir.
Yes.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Joshua. I have to say, first of all, that I'm glad that we are actually doing this program today, because several weeks ago, if not many weeks ago, we met somewhere in Maryland, and you wanted to do this program.
Yeah, thank you very much for providing the opportunity. We're extremely grateful to VOA for giving this platform to talk about public health and tobacco control across the African continent.
You're most welcome. You, in particular, wanted to talk about some reports, particularly the FCTC report.
Yes.
What is its significance in your view?
Well, I think, first of all, as the subject today is about the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which is the first ever World Health Organization treaty on public health. And as your introduction said, 142 African countries out of the 46 in the WHO sub-Saharan African region ratified the FCTC. And from the beginning, I think I would like to say that that's a law. It's binding both internationally, and also it's a commitment of the African governments to their citizens. So that's number one. Number two, this just about February this year, the Network of African Academies of Sciences, the eminent leading scientists in Africa, released this report, which I hope our viewers will be able to see and hopefully be circulated through your social media network. And it's called Preventing a Tobacco Epidemic in Africa. And what the report does, it's a call for effective action to support health, social, and economic development in Africa. Where we are starting from, Shaka, is a recognition that the tobacco industry, which is our subject of conversation today, sells and markets a product that is poisonous. It causes disability, disease, and kills. And I think we are, the report calls African governments to put in place measures that are compliant with the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control to put past laws to protect health, save development on the continent, and give people a chance to live healthier lives.
You talked about how 42 African countries from the sub-Saharan region have ratified the treaty. You know, signing the agreement or doing a ratification is one thing. But what is there, frankly, that tells you that at the end of the day, they are going to abide by the signature that they appended on that piece of paper?
That's an excellent question, Shaq. I think let's start from the real historical perspective. The truth is, when the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control was signed, Africa stood as a block. Remember, the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control is a binding treaty. It's a law. And the member states that are the parties to the FCTC, as we call it, represent more than 88% of the world's population. So first and foremost, I think it signifies a strong recognition of the urgency and the significance of taking action to protect lives and safeguard health, number one. Number two, I think when the African government stood up to get its treaty ratified, signed and ratified, they were acting from a clear understanding that after all the years that African governments have spent dealing with the communicable diseases, tuberculosis, HIV, AIDS, malaria, Africa can no longer afford another epidemic. And although the figures, the numbers of tobacco consumption are relatively low in Africa compared to the rest of the world, we are seeing a shift because the rest of the world has made huge progress. Laws have been passed. So in terms of the first answer to your question is, we have seen laws that have been passed from this country, United States of America, great progress. Latin America, we are seeing huge progress across the region. Russia, one of the biggest nations, has just passed laws recently and across Asia. And as these laws get passed, we are saying that the tobacco industry is targeting the African governments. In fact, we have on authority of the British American tobacco documents, documents that show that because the market is declining, consumption is declining in the rest of the world, the market is dwindling in the rest of the world, Africa provides, from their perspective, what they call huge prospects for growth. And statistically, in 2010, there were only two regions of the world where the tobacco industry registered growth in cigarette volumes. Those were Asia, Middle East, and Africa. But Africa is increasingly going to take the bigger share. So to come back to a specific question, this report is saying, let's go to the basics. Let the African governments pass laws that are comprehensive enough and that are compliant with the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, because it's a commitment to the international community, it is a commitment to their citizens, and it's the best thing that any African government can do. And we are seeing change on the continent in terms of real evidence that that's happening, from South Africa to Kenya to Burkina Faso. And as late as March, Senegal just passed a very strong tobacco control law to protect the health of its citizens. So I think we are seeing traction, and I think that the report is calling for urgent action on the part of the African leadership.
In 30 seconds, what are the fundamental reasons why smoking seems to be on the increase in Africa?
First of all, the tobacco industry marketing strategies. The industry is targeting Africa because it's a growing market, number one. Number two, very sophisticated targeting of young people, because tobacco is a very addictive product. It is the only, by the way, it is the only product that one can buy and use as prescribed by the manufacturer. And it will either kill them or cause disease or cause disability. So long as we have addiction, so long as we are targeting young people, that will happen. Thirdly, you have a growing middle class in Africa. The economy in Africa is also growing. So the affordability is on the increase.
I see. Before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
tobacco industry in Africa is able to wield a great deal of power over governments despite recent push for regulations to control smoking. Tobacco is Africa's most valuable crop export, only surpassed by coffee and cocoa, according to the United Nations. Tobacco growing is labor-intensive. In poor families who depend on the crop, children work on tobacco farms from a very early age. In many developing countries, the tobacco industry forces farmers into contracts which oblige them to buy seeds in advance and then sell their product at a set fee, often lower than the cost of production. Green tobacco sickness, or GTS, is the only health risk that is specifically associated with tobacco growing. It's preventable by wearing protective clothing. Advertising restrictions are few, and ads tend to reflect the aspirations of the poor to emulate the West. More than 30 developing countries do not require health warnings to appear on cigarette packs. South Africa has a comprehensive tobacco control law, including bans on tobacco advertising, smoke-free public places, and health warnings.
Cup Nonstop, VOAFootball.com.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. I am sorry that is the wrong, really, aspect of the teleprompter, but let me go to Ivan Blecher. Good evening, Ivan.
Good evening, Shaka.
I am sure that you must have been following your fellow panelists' argument. Did you?
I did, and I think Joshua gave a very good summary of the status quo.
Now, in light of what he said, what would you say that African governments need to do in order to make sure that they indeed ratified this very important treaty?
Yeah, I think the critical thing is that ratification is just a step. Implementation of the treaty is critically important, because ratifying without implementing is going to mean no real action on the ground. And what the report that Joshua was speaking of, the African Academy of Sciences report, reiterates is that African governments should be implementing the policy measures in the FCTC. And there's some critically important policy measures that they can be following. For instance, governments should be implementing comprehensive advertising bans on tobacco products. What we see often is piecemeal bans or restrictions or regulations, and the evidence shows that these don't work, that one needs comprehensive bans. And the evidence clearly shows that comprehensive advertising bans work, and that they're particularly effective in developing countries. Another aspect is clean indoor air laws, is to make sure that we don't allow smoking inside public places, in bars, in restaurants, in schools, in hospitals, in shopping malls, to ensure that children are obviously not exposed to smoke, but also that the property rights are attached to non-smokers, that the majority of the population that don't smoke will have the right to clean air. What we also need is, most importantly in Africa, is tax policy. The primary reason why we're seeing tobacco consumption increasing in Africa is because incomes are rising. And as incomes rise, consumption of many products, including cigarettes and tobacco, is going to rise. And what governments are able to do is use the fiscal policy tools use tobacco taxation as the mechanism to ensure that tobacco products don't become more affordable. Because as they become more affordable, they become more affordable to children. And we know that the majority of smokers, when they start smoking, are going to start smoking as children or as adolescents.
Now, even we know that
very few smokers will start smoking in adulthood. And if we can make them...
Even I was trying to say that, you know as well as I do, that a lot of times you have governments actually talking the talk without necessarily walking the walk or walking the talk. Is there a role, for example, for civil society in this particular case?
I think in all these policy areas, the role for civil society to encourage governments and to hold governments to account is critical. If we look at the developed world and even countries in Africa where we've had successful tobacco control interventions, we've seen that civil society has been a driving force behind governments and has also been a partner for governments. And it's not just about holding them to account, but also being a critical partner in helping them develop policy.
Now, what about you, Francois Van de Meere? You obviously have heard the two making their arguments. What would be, for example, the economic implications of this?
Shaka, thank you. Yes, I've been following as good as I can, and thank you for giving me an opportunity. And obviously, what I say is important. I'm also the global president of the ITGA, which represent more than 30 million tobacco growers and their workers all around the world. Mm-hmm. So it's an important constituency of economies of many countries. And I might surprise you and maybe some of the panelists, but as a tobacco man through and through, as somebody representing many, many stakeholders, I don't even want to touch on the health arguments around tobacco, but because I don't think there's anybody out there today, or very few people out there today, that do not know that tobacco use is harmful to health. We don't want our kids to smoke. We want existing smokers to stop smoking, because the bottom line is smoking is harmful, the use of tobacco products is harmful, and therefore it needs to be regulated, and people need to be educated. And our view is that education, the role of education, is underplayed. Education should be first, and then backed up by reasonable and workable regulation, a reasonable and workable, stable excise policy, back that up as well. And then I'm very sure that the objectives of reducing consumption of tobacco over the world will work. The reality, if we take the emotion out of the argument, is that there's still between 1.1 and 1.3 billion smokers around the world. And even the World Health Organization predicts that this is going to grow to 1.6 billion in the year 2025. So it's not going to happen overnight. And, for those extremists within the tobacco control activists, or even the extreme people in the health fraternity, developing extreme guidelines and extreme taxation regimes will not solve the problem. Regulation must be workable, must be evidence-based, and must be aimed at achieving the health objectives of people. In Africa in particular, the smoking incidence, as I think Joshua made the remark very correctly, is that the smoking incidence is of the lowest in the world, but mortality rates are the highest in the world. In countries like Japan and Greece, where the people smoke like hell, their life expectancy is almost double than that in Africa. And that just shows you that in Africa, people die of other things. Tobacco is far down the priority list. If you look at HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, malnutrition, and that's where the focus should be, notwithstanding the fact that tobacco is harmful and that should be regulated. But what I also want to make the point is there's no link between consumption and production. So do not develop guidelines that can harm the tobacco producers in Africa or anywhere else in the world, because there is no link. If tobacco tobacco, for example, is not produced in Uganda or not in Zimbabwe, it will have no impact on consumption. Another country will just pick up the production because the demand is there. Yep. And the demand, will be reduced over a long period of time if it is approached in a sensible way, in a balanced way. Uganda last week where there's a new tobacco bill. Now, the bill is typically drafted suitable for a first world country. It will not work. You know, it's got extreme measures, for example, the banning of the display of tobacco products. Now, if you understand Uganda, if you understand how the market works in many African countries, it is mostly an informal market. How do you ban the display of tobacco products if the informal sector sells the majority of products?
Now, Francois, excuse me, regulate 500 meters of smoking from an open door if
it will basically ban tobacco? We cannot ban tobacco. And I think Evan said it very rightly. Smokers are in the minority. And therefore, it should be treated and designated as that. But you should never treat smokers like second-hand citizens because they are not second-hand citizens.
Now, Francois, they have a right
to make a lifestyle choice.
Excuse me, Francois.
They should have the right to exercise their choice where they don't intervene or bother those who have the right to clean air. So it's all about a balance and not about a ban, unintended consequences.
Excuse me, Francois. You know as well as I do, for example, the FCTC report actually says that you fear that particular treaty and the Friday, which is no smoking day, are actually considered, at least in your view or in the view of your organization, as a sort of economic imperialism. Is that how you look at it?
I'm not sure if I understand you correctly, Shaka, but the use of tobacco is a reality. And the benefits that tobacco bring to countries and to community is a reality. We can't wish that away.
But
you can't replace tobacco.
Isn't there a sort of trade-off? Isn't there a sort of trade-off, really, in terms of how it is viewed as a weapon, for example, that causes death, and how perhaps you look at it from a vantage point of making profit? Where is the trade-off?
There's no trade-off. The use of tobacco in the world is a reality. We all understand that it's harmful. Tobacco is not the only harmful product that people use. It's not the only harmful lifestyle choice that people make. There are many, many others. So you can't go down that argument that there's a trade-off. There is absolutely no trade-off. There's a demand for tobacco products. It's a harmful product. It needs to be regulated, needs to be taxed, but it needs to be done in a way that can achieve a reduction in consumption over a period of time. Until such time, the reality of tobacco, the benefits of tobacco, the employment, the investment, the fact that farmers make a living in deep rural areas. As I said in Uganda last week, where farmers stand up and tell their own government, please do not hurt us because we've tried alternatives as small businessmen and there are no other alternatives which can pay for my kids' school fees. So farmers try alternatives in any way, but as long as there is a market and a demand for tobacco, it will be produced by somebody somewhere in the world. So let us work and let us educate and let us regulate the sector in a sensible way so that the legal sector produces a legal product that complies with all government regulation on which all the taxes are paid, a responsible sector that makes big economic and other contributions in the countries they operate. And that is something that we cannot wish away or argue away. Because if you take tobacco, for example, out of Africa, Africa will fall on its back. Economically speaking, then you will see poverty, then you will see unemployment, then you will see people dying of hunger, never mind dying of smoking. So, you know, all I'm saying is there is no trade-off, but there are realities which we have to face, which we've got to be open-minded about, and we have to look at the whole picture.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think your point is well made. You're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Diallo. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from the audience through our social media platforms. Meanwhile, let's take a look at our letter of the week from a follower who posted this comment on our wall.
Filippo Mwam Nyange from Guangdong in China writes, tobacco is a great source of income. Raising taxes will not help at all because those who smoke will keep smoking. Governments should impose effective measures to protect non-smokers from secondhand smoke in public places.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Governments benefit directly from tobacco tax increases. New revenues can pay to combat health-related issues caused by the crop and other social and development programs. In South Africa, from 1994 to 2001, revenues more than doubled as a result of such tax increases. Nations including Nigeria, Uganda, and Senegal consider adopting and implementing life-saving policies to curb tobacco use. This brings us to our question of the week, which simply asks, should African governments raise taxes on tobacco products? Is it a valid method to prevent future health concerns or simply a means to gain new revenue? Well, let's begin right away with a comment from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia in Liberia, who writes, the government has banned smoking in public places here in Liberia with a harsh punishment or fine. Smoking in public places is not good because it affects other people. All tobacco manufacturing companies must close immediately. Well, very, very harsh over there. Another comment comes from Tracy Sylvia Mbeza in Kampala, Uganda, who says, I support the government in the increase of taxes on tobacco for the sake of people's lives. And at the same time, it will boost the revenue for the country. It will slowly reduce the consumer's addicted habits since the prices would be high, yet their income is constant. Well, quite an interesting strategy here, Shaka. Jack up the price and people will buy less of it. And who knows, eventually quit. What do you make of it?
What about that, Tribert? Are you following?
Yes, I'm following Shaka, and thank you very much. My view really goes with what Francois explained about these regulations. First of all, I agree totally, 100%, that tobacco should be regulated. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I agree that the non-smoker should be protected. But also, the smokers should not be taken as second citizen.
Second class.
Yes, mm-hmm. Second class of citizen, because this is a matter of choice. And whatever you take in life, if you take it, if you overuse it, is going to harm you. And in my view, if someone wish to smoke and they know that the product is harmful, if he take it, if he overtake it, then it's up to him to decide what he should do.
Now, Tribert, I know that you are now considered to be a senior citizen in the sense that you are about 74 years young now. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I think the last time I saw you, you seem to be enjoying your cigarette.
Yes,
do you
I
still
do
smoke?
I do since I was 11, and I'm not intending to stop because this is my choice. Not because I'm in the tobacco industry. I started smoking before I entered this business. I smoke because I enjoy it.
Well, it's very interesting you say that because, Tribert, I also happen to have actually started smoking when I was 11 by watching cinema, looking at people like John Wayne, Gene Autry, Clint Eastwood promoting Marlboro on their horses. And it took me many, many years before I had to drop it. It was after I finished writing my PhD dissertation at UCLA in 1988 that I eventually stopped because a doctor suggested that I was not doing very well with my Dunhill International.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you, but remember at my age of 11, there were no cinema in Rwanda, and I could not see John Watt and so on, and I don't know really how it came. I started smoking, but what I know is that when I recognize that I am smoking, I find I enjoyed it. And to come back on what is happening in Africa on implementation of those regulation, yes, I agree that tobacco should be regulated, but not the way this first world is trying to push it in Africa, because they have to recognize that is one of the support income for our farmers. If you take an example in Uganda, you have more than 20,000 farmers who draw their income, their cash crop, being tobacco. They draw their income from tobacco. If you stop tomorrow these people to grow tobacco, what is going to happen? How will they pay the school fees of their children? And also, you stop Uganda. Will this mean that the other country are going to stop to grow tobacco?
Now, do I take it, if I hear you correctly, that you as a manufacturer...
Yes.
You are, for example, prepared to work closely with a government that has ratified some of these treaties rather than undermine the treaties?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree 100% that the non-smoker should be protected. And that is the reason of the regulation. But the regulation goes overboard. They try to say no tobacco growing, no tobacco sold openly, and they go overboard. But otherwise, I support totally the regulation of to regulate tobacco.
Thank
it's
you.
It's a very good idea.
Thank you very much. Mariama, do you have any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Yes, indeed. Let's move on to a posting from Haz Law from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who writes, raising taxes is not a valid method. It is better for the government to find alternative ways to eliminate the production of tobacco. Thereafter, they should make sure tobacco workers must be empowered for other jobs. That's quite an interesting analysis. Let's look at another posting from Omonua Okugbo from Nigeria. And he writes, African governments should raise taxes on tobacco products to make it less accessible to their citizens. However, it is better to educate their citizens in letting them know the health hazards of tobacco consumption and why it is better to stay tobacco-free. Shaka, this is a very realistic approach here. Educate the populace, and they can eventually make their own decisions. But also finding ways to discourage the production and consumption of the crop, another strategy here. What do you make of it?
Very interesting. I'm sure that Joshua makes something out of that. What about that?
Absolutely.
Joshua?
First of all, thank you, Shaka. The gentleman who spoke agree with Evan Blech and I that it is important to regulate tobacco use, and it's also important to regulate the tobacco industry.
Perhaps not only with Evan Blech and you, but perhaps with humanity.
Yeah, but let me just tackle a few things, Shaka, because there are a number of things that they raised, and I want to tackle them very quickly, and I'll be very brief.
You have 2 minutes.
First of all, is tobacco farming. I think two things about tobacco farming. Tobacco regulation is not about tobacco farming. Within the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, there are Article 17 and Article 18 that deal with the tobacco farming. Number two, on tobacco farming as well. Yes, we know for a fact from all the research we have done that the tobacco industry executives are the richest in the world, for most part. But when you look after across Africa,
they are richer than the oil kings.
You can put comparators around that. But the only comparison I like to draw is if you compare them with the tobacco control tobacco farmers, the farmers we have growing tobacco are among the poorest in Africa.
Peanut. Just like the cocoa farmers.
Absolutely.
Just like the cocoa farmers.
Yes. And the question I'm asking,
Shaka, so where is the government? Where are the governments in this particular country? Where are the farmers operate?
Which is, if you look, let's take the case of Uganda, because both gentlemen talked about Uganda. And the president of Uganda himself recently told the farmers, this is not going to be a crop that's going to help you. We're going to help you find alternative livelihoods. Number two.
So what are those alternative livelihoods? That man, the last time I checked, has been in power for 28 years.
Well, that's what has happened in Uganda as well, is the government policy has prioritized 17 crops that are lucrative and useful for cash crops and food crops. Tobacco is not one of those. So that's number one issue. Number two, Shaka, we talked about extremisms here. Let's be very clear again. There are no double standards in tobacco control. There is only one reference point, the Framework Convention of Tobacco Control. It has been ratified by all the governments. It's the same in America, the same in Africa. There's no difference. Number three.
Why can't you work with people like Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa? Because according to you and from what I heard, he sounds like a reasonable man.
Well, look, the Framework Convention of Tobacco Control is very clear that Article 5.3 says that the government must act to protect public health against the vested interests, commercial interests of the tobacco industry. I admire him for what he has been able to do. I admire them for what they've been able to do. But they make money, I'm sorry to say, out of deadly poisonous product. It kills, causes disability, causes disease. So what negotiation can you make?
Someone might also argue about people who brew like Changa in Kenya, like Waraji in Uganda.
And I'm sure
like that some other types of alcohol. How do you
Shaka,
respond
that's,
to that?
Well, I think that one of the arguments, the problems we have had in tobacco control is people use excuses not to do the right thing. Those things need to be tackled. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the government of South Africa, for instance, they're tackling both tobacco use and alcohol. In Botswana recently, the president himself has introduced a 30% tobacco levy. Mm-hmm. Someone talked about tobacco taxes. It is the most effective way, proven effective way, of reducing tobacco consumption, stopping young people from initiating tobacco use, and giving government a revenue.
Well,
and finally, on the issue of farming, if I just come back there as a final, an issue of employment, the tobacco industry raises those arguments all the time. The poorest farmers are in Africa. Tobacco farmers. Mm-hmm. In terms of revenue, we say the government, yes, raise a revenue. It has three benefits. You can be able to put money into public health. You can be able to provide, to gain more money to support development. And you also help people to stop, to quit smoking or decrease the consumption of tobacco. So it's a low-win formula for government.
I think next time we have a show, we need to have someone representing the government or government interests. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, I actually want to just ask him a quick question about those alternative crops that the Ugandan government has actually proposed to the farmers. I'm just curious to know what were their reactions, you know, what were those alternative crops?
Well, I think, Mariama, as I say, first of all, I'm talking about the government policy in Uganda. The Minister of Agriculture has prioritized what they think are crops that are relevant for development, and there are 17 of them. And out of the 17, none of them is anything to do with tobacco farming. Why? Because the president says time and time again that the poorest sections of the community in Uganda are the tobacco growers. And that is because the tobacco industry is exploiting them. It's because they are tied into contracting systems that do not help them. It is because tobacco has no real health or any other economic benefit. I think Francois talked about health issues. We don't talk about public health alone. Mm. We are saying that tobacco use has public health consequences for the African continent. Mm. It has negative consequences for development in Africa. It has negative environmental consequences for the
African region. But it has economic benefits. You can't deny that. You go to Zimbabwe, for example. You go to Malawi.
Let me ask you a question. The research that has been done shows that for every $1, generally, mm-hmm. every $1 that the government gets from the tobacco industry, the government spends $3 dealing with the consequences of tobacco use. So it's a zero-sum game.
I'm afraid time happens not to be our best ally. We have to really say bye-bye to Mariama.
Well, thanks to everyone who is active on the social media scene and also using other traditional means to get in touch and let us know what they think. We appreciate each and every one of the responses. Please keep them coming. Before I go, just a reminder, we would like to hear from you, so drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, votes are being recounted in Malawi, despite local and international poll observers who say that the vote was credible and transparent. More on that next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and today we are examining the tobacco industry on the African continent as it comes under scrutiny for child labor issues, more aggressive tobacco taxes, and general health concerns. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at projected African smoking rates. In Africa, 9% of boys and 3% of girls smoke. That's very high compared to other developing regions. Africa is set for massive population growth. The region now accounts for 12% of the global population. This will climb to 30% by 2100. Africa will have the second largest number of smokers of any region by 2060. African nations experienced strong economic growth in the 2000s. People have money to spend on tobacco.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us today, we are examining the tobacco industry on the African continent as it comes under scrutiny for child labor issues, more aggressive tobacco taxes, and general health concerns. Our distinguished guests are Joshua Charo, Africa Program Director for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, a non-profit organization based here in the nation's capital. Evan Blecher, Director and Senior Economist in the International Tobacco Control Research Program at the American Cancer Society and an affiliate in the Southern Africa Labor and Development Research Unit at the University of Cape Town. He joins us via Skype from South Africa. Francois van der Merwe, Chairman of the International Tobacco Growers Association for the Africa region, who joins us via Skype from Cape Town also. And last but not least, Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa, Pan-African industrialist and philanthropist. He is the founder of the Pan-African Tobacco Group, which operates in 9 countries in Africa. He joins us via telephone link up from Hamburg, Germany. I have to say, gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thanks.
I gather that I have to go for the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, and we do have a gentleman by the name Akin Bode from Nigeria. Good evening, Akin Bode.
Good evening, Shaka.
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today? Where are you speaking from? Are you in Lagos?
I'm taking this call from Abuja in Nigeria.
The capital itself. So what is your question or comment, Akin Bode?
Well, I have listened to Francois and the other gentleman there. And particularly, it actually interests me to hear Francois saying that he will not go into any of the health issues and any of the health arguments. And that what you really want is that a sensible regulation, and that a regulation that will not harm, if I want to use his own words, a regulation that will not harm his own business. Whereas it's already documented all around the world, he has accepted that tobacco smoking is harming our brothers and our sisters. He doesn't want his own business to be harmed. We can't continue to tolerate the harms being done and the deaths being inflicted as a result of tobacco consumption. So, Shaka, the issue here is that there is irreconcilable differences between public health and the business interest of the industry. The tobacco industry has to continue to maintain their business at the expense of the lives of our brothers and sisters. And the other gentleman has also mentioned the issue of choice. And what is known is that tobacco not only harms the person that is puffing, but it harms the people around him. So we need to protect not only the smokers. We are not trying to say, look, the smokers are second-class citizens. No, we are saying, look, we've got to create the enabling environment and the necessary policies that will even allow the smokers to make informed and right choices. We have to take tobacco key.
I'm afraid, Akin Bode, I think, frankly, your point is well made, and time, frankly, happens not to be our best ally. Let's stay in Nigeria and bring in Vuva. Good evening, Vuva. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. You have a minute, please.
Hello, Shaka. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, Vuva? I am terrific. How are you today?
Yeah, it's Vuva Umari Yaza from Kaduna, Nigeria.
My friend, Vuva Umari, you have less than a minute, please.
My question, please. Now, as a manufacturer and as well as a smoker, can you give me the advantages of manufacturing or smoking a cigarette in public? Now, another aspect I want to talk to is, don't you think, as an environmentalist, don't you think it's good to pass a unique verdict over the issue of public smoking in any place in the world, globally, in global perspective, sir?
Thank you.
It's been Vuva Umari Yaza from Kaduna, Nigeria.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Francois. Francois, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
What are the advantages, for example, he says about manufacturing tobacco? You can also tell us about the advantages, of course, of growing tobacco, for example, as opposed to vegetables or, you know, or any other type of food for consumption. Because I have been, since I grew up, I have been told that African leaders talk about how people eat what they do not produce, but actually produce what they do not consume.
Yeah. Yes, Shaka, thank you. You know, I think what we need in tobacco is the ability to have a mature debate. And I disagree that the differences are irreconcilable. I absolutely think that there's a way forward if we have the maturity to sit around the table and address the issue of tobacco, its harm, and how it should be reduced over time in a sensible way. Tobacco farmers are business people all around the world. They have a choice in what they should produce. I have never encountered a tobacco farmer who is forced to grow tobacco.
You have 30 seconds. You have 30 seconds, Francois, I'm afraid.
The tobacco farmers, you can go to them. Most of them today are diversified, small businessmen. They grow food crops. They grow beans. They even have a little bit of livestock. But in conjunction with tobacco, not without tobacco. And that's a very good model, to have tobacco as a cash crop, because it's easy to grow in far distances from markets. It's non-perishable. It's got a high value in relation to its yield.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Francois. Thank you very much. And frankly, I have to give the last word, I think, to Tribert Rujugiro from Germany, because frankly, he didn't get enough time to participate in the show. Go for it, Tribert. You have a minute and a half. Go for it.
Thank you, Shaka. I think, as I said, I agree with the regulation, but what I don't agree really is why they just overdo it. And one of the questions I ask myself, these people, have they analyzed why this government, who signed the treaty, but don't implement it? Have they checked what is the reason? In my view, the reason is that they don't have alternative. They were talking about farmers in Uganda, that they are 17 crop. You think someone who has got land and can grow something which can be more beneficial than tobacco will not go for it? Why does he choose tobacco instead of those 17 products he's talking about?
Thank you very much, Tribert. Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. We have to wait until next time. Before we go, we would be remiss if I didn't mention the passing of our former colleague, Maimuna Ndiaye Mills, who died Thursday, May 22nd, in the French capital, Paris, following an illness. For more than 15 years, Maimuna Mills was an international personality of radio and television here at The Voice of America and the host of WorldNet Television's Africa Journal, a call-in program. She also served as a reporter for Voice of America's French to Africa service. At the time of her passing, she worked with the UNDP regional office in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. She entered the United Nations in 2002. Where she held several positions in communications and public information. Here she served her country as the special advisor to the Prime Minister of Senegal, and also worked in the private sector in the United States. She will be truly missed by many of my colleagues here at The Voice of America, such as her former producer and now Straight Talk Africa producer, Deirdre Marie McIntosh, affectionately known as the Sadona, who worked very closely with her week in, week out, on Africa Journal. And the most sincere and heartfelt condolences to her family from my colleague and her Senegalese sister, Mariam Jaro. May her soul rest in eternal peace, for a lady that in a sense inspired me to be a host of television. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Joshua Charo, Africa Program Director for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, Evan Brecher, Director and Senior Economist, the International Tobacco Control Research Program at the American Cancer Society. He joined us via Skype from South Africa. Francois van der Merwe, Chairman of the International Tobacco Growers Association for the Africa region, who joined us via Skype from Cape Town, South Africa. And last but not least, Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa, Pan-African industrialist and philanthropist. He joined us via telephone link-up from Hamburg, Germany. Thanks to you all. Don't get bitter, get better. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.